Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Fans of Power Podcast, the only weekly podcast dedicated from He-Man and She-Ra and everything in between. I'm Brian Ozone, and I'm here, as always, with my guys, Joe Amato and Tyler Baker. What's up, guys? What's going on?
Nothing. What's the new news? What's going on? What's coming out? I thought I was seeing some stuff at San Diego Comic-Con, some specials from Super 7 or something.
Let me tell you something, man. I am absolutely going broke this year with all the
exclusives. That's not possible. Wait a second.
You don't know broke.
Yeah, you don't understand what broke is. You can't.
You're like BB on the cartoon dog. Like broke. What is broke?
Dude, it is app. It's like every day, like something new. And I mean, we're getting closer and closer. And I mean, usually they already set stuff in stone. But I mean, it's ridiculous how much. How many exclusives we're actually getting? It's crazy.
Lay down some of the exclusives.
Now, the Loyal Subjects are doing a He-Man. They're doing two different things now that I've seen in the last 2 days. They're doing a He-Man close to colors of the original figure or original concept art or something like that. Okay. They're also
aren't they doing a Prince Adam too?
Prince Adam, yeah, but that's something else. And then they're also doing a Man at Arms and Stratos two pack or color scheme at 3:30. I remember the time at 3:30. I don't know what day though. But they're doing that. Now we'll switch subjects to Super 7. They're doing the $45 enormous trash can set with I forget how many figures come in it.
Is there 20? Is it 22? No, wait, it's not 22. Wait, how many is there? Because it's supposed to be
It's like 25 or 29 or something like that. There's a lot of characters and figures.
Because it's the new set that they're doing, and they're putting the original wave in there too, and it's all going to be in green, correct?
Green or yellow.
Oh, green or yellow? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, they're doing two different colors. Plus, they also already said on the show, but they're doing the next wave of the reaction figures. They're doing another trash can set, but I'm not sure if it's the old wave or the new wave.
Are
sure.
They coming carded, though? I see they're colored. They are actually going to be
fully
painted.
I'm sure they're
going to
be carded. They have to be carded because they're sold separately.
Oh, okay, I wasn't sure. But yeah, I see that at least they're painted, so you won't have to go through the solid color or whatever colors and black and white. You're getting
exactly.
Right to the colored ones. And aren't they going to be giving out that He-Man coin, too? You're going to have a He-Man coin to get in this year?
Yeah, this year they're doing the He-Man. Last year's with Skeletor. But unfortunately, I'm not going this year, so I have a friend or two that's going to hook me up with some stuff and the swag and whatever they're giving out. Besides the He-Man stuff, there's other exclusives that I'm looking to get as well with other properties. So that's what I'm saying. This year it's rough. I think I'm already somewhere in like the $500-$600 range, and that's only just a few things. It's crazy how much all this stuff costs.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, if you can get it, what the heck? But Tyler, are you going? Yeah. Or are you trying to get any of the stuff, Tyler?
Nah, probably not. It's just not in my budget to get half that stuff. As much as I would like to have the muscle set and the Super 7 figures and all that stuff, I'm happy for everybody else. I like looking at it. I think it looks fantastic, but it's budget wise, it's not. I just got to make sure I can afford the classics and the Thundercat figures. That is my number one priority. So everything else is pretty much just gonna have to be if I happen to come across it at a comic book convention of some kind or at a flea market, somebody selling that stuff, or somebody said, I like Tyler Baker enough to send him in a San Diego exclusive. So
and in time everything will come down in price too. If you wait a couple of months or even a year, or 2 years, 3 years later down the line, you'll get the set of the Super 7 reaction figures, for like $25, or even if someone sells them loose and they get, sick and tired of looking at them, they'll sell them cheap.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you'll get them.
It always happens. Walk in one day and go, oh, I'm sick of looking at this stuff.
Yeah, there's a guy right now selling off his entire collection of He-Man, I believe it is, because he needs to pay doctor's bills or something. So, I mean, unfortunately.
What kind of He-Man toys are you talking here?
I don't know. I have them all, so I don't know. I think it's classics.
Oh.
So you got Tyler peaked for a second. He was thinking maybe he was selling off some vintage stuff. So.
I want a Fright Fighter. I'm sick of not having a Fright Fighter.
Oh, you didn't get to enjoy that? That was an awesome vehicle.
No. That's the only vehicle I don't own. And that's the one thing, if I go on eBay, somebody wants $70 for a Fright Fighter wing and then $150 for a complete one, but the radar smashed.
The cockpit door.
Yeah, and someone's so, just, you know, like,
you know what I love? Ridiculous. You know, it's weird. You're talking about all these crazy prices. Like, people are trying to sell Rotar and Twistoid on eBay, the new classic ones. Everybody's trying to sell for $220, $275, $300, and none of these sell. I'm like, what are you guys trying to do? Nobody is buying this. Quit trying to sell it for that much.
You know what it is? I think they see that that other people are selling it for that, and I think they think that's like the going price, so they're doing it too, and it's going nowhere fast.
Sure, but they should see it doesn't sell. I mean, more power to them if they would sell it, but nobody's paying that amount.
No.
But hey, I mean, hey, if they can
make it. You know what it is? Pretty much everybody already got those figures when they came out, and you know they were ready available, and there was a lot made, so
they're going to drop down drastically. Yeah, trust me.
Unfortunately, it's not like trying to buy Horde Troopers, where that's always in demand no matter what. And
I still think people need to ask way too much
for classic figures, even on the online toy stores and stuff like that. I'm like, you people are out of your mind here asking all this extra money for something that really comes up on Maddie Collector every so often, you know. I'm like, you know what? Right. You do realize it's not that hard to get this figure, right?
They're going for impulses. They want people that do the impulse buying that need it badly or maybe just aren't really sure where else to get them, and they hope they can catch that person. And
I always consider these scalpers as like the Nazis, as like an Indiana Jones, like. It's like Nazis. I hate these guys. I mean, to me, that's scalpers. These people that they're just
it's like an
army of these douchebags who are just like buying up, going to Walmarts and Targets and slapping a big price on there. And I mean, it's just like we need to be like a group of archaeologists who are going around taking out all these scalpers. You know what I'm saying?
I collect the DC Multiverse, and they're already doing that because Walmart has two exclusive Suicide Squad figures, and they're already doing that with those guys, and I don't have any Walmarts around here, so I was able to go last night on eBay actually and find them both. One seller was selling them both for $56, so that wasn't a bad deal because they're going for like $22 a piece. So, some of the scalpers, I mean, they deserve to get crucified for what they do because it's absolutely ridiculous and it really. You know, it just sucks that they need to wake up and look at themselves in the mirror and think they're doing something good every day because they're absolutely not.
I could picture myself like with the bazooka getting ready to fire at a group of them because they're getting ready to open up a men in box attorney in place. And it's like, you do it, I'm going to blow it up. And we're like, you're not going to do it, Tyler. You want to see what's just inside, just like the rest of us here. And then I drop it and I'm like, oh, dear God. And then they got me tied up and they open it up and, I guess.
And then you get to read the comic, and you get all,
Yeah, and I'm like, you know what? It's really not that bad. It's not like, I'm thinking all these evil spirits are going to come out of a mint and box. I'm like, it's like, you're blowing up! You know, like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. Can you turn on the ram track there? Oh, man, look at that. It is so cool. And then the scalpel looking at me like, we'll sell it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, before we get to a couple topics of characters and other discussion, I got to ask something, and this is me being absolutely ignorant. What is this thing? Is it called crowdfunding, or what is this thing that? Do you know what I'm talking about? When there's like something you got
crowdfunding, something like that. People come up with ideas.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Yeah, you're right. They have things, and okay, well, whatever. However you pronounce it, this is what shocks me. Have you guys both seen? Which it was shown. I thought over a month ago, a while ago. That Orko mug, that
80stees.com?
Yeah.
80stees.com that they were going to do? Well, I didn't know that was being crow-funded, whatever. And all they need is 200 people to like pre-order or fund it, and then they can go through and put it into production. And would you believe that it's been up a long time? And yesterday I thought was the end of it, but now they're given another 90 days or another
oh, really?
9 days, another 9 days in their project, but only 180 sold because it would have failed, I think, the other day. And I'm shocked. I'm like, you're telling me out of all the Masters of the Universe fans and the time this has been up that they haven't even got 200 people to fund this? I mean, I even funded it. I mean, I didn't know, like I said, if you guys were interested, but I'm letting fans out there know about this. It's that shocks me because I was seeing it shared everywhere, and people were like, man, I can't wait to get this mug. Can't wait to get this mug. And maybe they didn't know that it was a crowdfunding thing or whatever. So just to let them know, go to that 80stees.com, and they only need 20 more people.
Yeah, it just
I thought it was already ready to go. I didn't even finish the article.
See, that's what I mean. A lot of people maybe thought it was already ready to go, and maybe that's why it hasn't been funded, because I was like, there's got to be more than 200 Masters fans that would fund this and then want it, so it just kind of blew me away.
Yeah, I just already have way too many mugs, so that's why, and I kind of think it was...
Wait a second, though. This is Masters. You got to have it
all on. It just looks ugly, plain and simple. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty...
I'm going to say what a lot of people say. If you don't get it, you ain't a true fan. You ain't a real fan.
Yeah, well, they can come to my house, and then it can drop dead from all the stuff that I'm a true fan.
Okay, good. I'll get some of that stuff. Well, speaking of true fans and other stuff, I'm going to pass this one to Tyler, because you mentioned something earlier, but it had nothing to do with what I'm going to say now. But you mentioned Thundercats. Well, I'm sure a lot of fans have seen that. I think it's going to be
all a hoax, people. It's an April Fool's joke that's been delayed greatly.
This is not an April Fool's joke. This is coming out in October. It's going to be by DC. It's going to be a 6-issue run, and it's going to be finally a crossover of Masters of the Universe and Thundercats, finally. Now, I have my thoughts of it.
30 years in the making.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have my thoughts because I used to always think about this as a kid. We know it's not going to be like how we wished as children. But, Tyler, what do you think this might be like? I know you have your thoughts of probably it's already going to be a disaster, possibly. But what would you hope from it? What do you think it's going to be like?
The story behind it, which is always something I had in the back of my head, like a possible crossover in my head, was to have Mom-Ra be interested in the Power Sword. So
that's apparently what it is.
That's what it is. So I'm like, okay, well, that's not a bad idea. And then
the artwork,
I was like, they're going to get some crummy artist. I'm like, oh, Lord. And then I look it up, and I'm like, oh, it's the guy who did the Batman Turtles crossover.
Yeah, it looks great.
So I'm like, okay, if they're not going to get Axel, this guy draws a good Batman and Turtles. I look at the way he draws, muscles and things like that. I'm like, okay, by the fact that this guy can draw some good-looking He-Man and Thundercat characters. So as long as the art is good and sharp and these guys look like a bunch of badasses and not just a bunch of sloppy, jagged edges and silly nonsense, which obviously this is not what that guy draws.
Oh, not at all.
No, so I'm pretty happy about that, even though I don't trust DC at all, but I think there's someone from Mattel is writing the story, so...
Is it the same person that did Eternity War, or no? I can't remember.
I don't know anybody from Mattel worked on the current book. I thought they had DC writers doing those books.
Oh, I wasn't sure. Okay. All right. I wasn't sure. All right.
I just, when the article I read, someone who works, I think, with the He-Man line, I don't know his name. I don't really, I saw it was somebody from Mattel was going to be writing the storyline. So as long as they don't get into, saying that, Lionel from the House of Claudius and all this other bio nonsense and rewriting histories and stuff like that, if they're pulling from the cartoon and pulling, from sources of things like, not tweaking and changing things and turns out that Lionel and Panther are related to each other twice removed from their father's side or some nonsense like that, I want a traditional... the way they're presented in the cartoon, not the later Thundercats cartoon. I know people like it, but in comparison, there's nothing that beats that original cartoon. So I'm not asking for much. I'm just asking for these characters to be treated with dignity and written with some sincerity of their characters and some beautiful artwork to go along with it, man. I want to, just give me some battles. I mean, see Slythe and Merman duking it out and Beastman and Monkey. Oh, yeah.
duking it out over misunderstandings before they actually team up with Mom Ra or something like that.
That would be some cool stuff. Yeah, you got to do the ones that you expect to see facing off against each other with, like you said, the mutants against certain evil masters and good masters, whatever you want to say. That would be kind of cool. And as long as, you got to give a Slide, Monkey Man, Jackman, Vulture Man. I mean, you got to bring them. So
I mean, I want to see the all four mutants and Rotaro and Mom Ra. I mean, I know we can't see everybody because we can't see Grun the Destroyer take on Scareglow. How awesome would that be? The Ghost Warrior versus the evil ghost of Skeletor.
It's gonna be it's gonna be good. I mean, it took this long for somebody to get both properties, and I don't think it's gonna take a dump. I think it's gonna do well. I think it's gonna be written well. If it's gonna be anything like the Turtles and Batman comic book, I thought that was it was such a greatly well written comic book. There was a lot of twists in it, and I think it's gonna be very well done. I agree. I hope that you don't have that crazy, ridiculous artwork. I hope that it's drawn well. I hope that it's written well. But I do believe it'll be good. I think they know the fans are anticipating something done right, and we've been waiting for so long for something like this to actually have the action figures both in the same scale, both done by the same, the Four Horsemen. I mean, it's just something that's been it's got to be right, It's
and I better not see any costume changes. I swear, if anyone decides to redesign Lion-O's outfit and do another He-Man costume change, I mean, I'm
yeah. If it's a little bit, there was a couple of different in the last couple of years, and then like the mini comics they did, the beginning online comics. There was one or two He-Man outfits I did enjoy. I thought it was done cool, but there was a lot that they shouldn't have. I agree, they can. It can be done right. I mean, if you're going to alter it a little bit, but be true to what we know. That's all I have to say about that.
Go ahead, Joe. What?
No, I was going to say, I mean, if there's a slight thing, but I mean, what I mean is, there was way too many costume changes in like the whole New 52. And before that, it's like, my God, how many different outfits are there? I mean, I don't want Lion-O in some super powered up, Saint Seiya.
Without a doubt.
Let them be what they should be, and just let it be an interesting story. I don't need Mumra Buster He-Man outfit. No.
The story should sell it, and the story would sell it. You know what I mean?
Speaking of the story, what they better not do. Here's the thing: is before the Eternity War, I don't know, whatever the one series was where. From DC of Masters of the Universe, where they were like in some dreams, or it kept dragging out, where they had to go through this trial and this trial and this trial, and I'm like, okay, could you just get to some action? I'm sitting there watching them walk. I feel like I'm watching like some kind of soap opera. And then finally, towards the end, you see one action scene, and that's it until next issue. It's like, please do not drag it out with just story, story, story of boring stuff. Sure, I want an interesting story. Don't get me wrong, but make sure there's a good amount of action.
If it was a long-term, ongoing title, then I can say, okay, you can drag it out a little bit.
But not too much. Sometimes...
But being that we know it's only going to be a 6-issue, I believe, a 7-issue, whatever it is, get to the point. You know what I mean? Like, don't waste any time.
Yeah, people want to see... This is all about seeing He-Man and Lion-O duking it out, Mumra and Skeletor meeting for the first time, Heroic Warriors... teaming up with the Thundercats, evil warriors with the evil mutants. This is not about a lot of, a lot of filling in with 3 or 4 issues of sorcerers explaining the history of Thundera to Prince Adam.
That's scary, yeah.
I was like, no. Yeah. This is all strictly meat and potatoes, man. There should be no fat on this meal that we're getting.
Again, it's like we're all fans. I mean, whether you're a He-Man fan or a Thundercat fan, and this is your first time experience, and I mean, 30 years have passed. I mean, you kind of had to know about the other by now. So, I mean, you know pretty much the backstory, so it doesn't have to be retold again. So, I mean, really, just get right into it,
I will say, because Wildstorm for those who did read these, and I'm curious if you guys read this or not too, but I remember Wildstorm did a which was a branch of DC, I think. I don't even know if they're still around anymore, but they did a series of Thundercat books. I talked to Joe about how cool this would be, but they did a series of one-shot issues where it's strictly one villain and one story. Next issue was Grin of the Story. Next issue was strictly Mom-Ra. Next issue was the Mutants.
Like Guy Counts of Evil.
Yeah, and then they went on to do Thundercats The Return, where Lionel went into the Book of Omens and was doing his training, and while he was gone, Mom-Ra took over, took the Thundercats captive, and was ruling Third Earth. Or New Thunder, I forget which one it was, but the artwork was stunning. They gave Lionel kind of like this slick kind of ninja training outfit. Like, he was wearing his traditional outfit during the initial run of one-shot books. Then they did Thundercats The Return, but everybody had their same look. They looked very mature-looking. Wile E. Kit and Wile E. Cat were growing up as slaves to Mom-Ra. I mean, this is not too far from, like, doing, we're going to give everybody amnesia, and I'm going to kill off the sorcerers kind of nonsense here. I mean, it's just strictly
by the number
story. Yeah, yeah, and they did, like, a Hammerhead's revenge storyline. So
yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. It's just get to the point, get to what we know, and let's see them battle it out or whatever the case is, and maybe if, you know, from there on, you know, build something on that, and then have a long term maybe crossover title, you know, that they're together, you know, but they meet, I don't know, somewhere in between, and you know, with Thundercats and the masters or whatever you want to call them, I don't know, you know, they team up and have fun, and you know, and I don't know, you know, it's just,
no, as long as, like I said, they don't disrespect either of the franchises, because you know, to downplay powers of one or the other, or to switch the storyline too much,
disrespect the fans too, you know,
because you don't want to lose them, because this could possibly be one of their best selling Masters of the Universe / Thundercats things, because it's bringing both properties together. I could see that being one of their best selling six issues, hopefully.
Plus, and I think they need to walk the fine line of saying the Power Sword is no greater than the Sword of Omens. You know, kind of like in the episode The Thundercutter, where the Sword of Omens could not draw against Hachiman's Thundercutter because he's a good guy. I think that would be a great idea to play up the idea that Lionel's Sword of Omens cannot really draw against He-Man and the Power Sword, because He-Man is not a legitimate threat. Like, he's not evil. Like, I'd like to see them kind of play with that, and then they have to go into like a physical fight. Or something like that. You know, when it comes to using weapons, they can't actually do it.
Do you think there'll be a scene where He-Man and Lionel get each other's sword? That'd be kind of cool.
I mean, just to see them, because maybe the Sword of Omens would I'm like, hey, you know what? This is a good guy here. I can work for you.
For whatever reason,
it'd be cool. It'd be cool if they were duking it out, and they
like a cool variant cover with He-Man holding accident. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like that would be like a cool like window, a picture, or whatever they call them in comics. That'd be pretty cool, and they'd
check
be like,
this out. Check out a scene. Could you imagine something like maybe He-Man falling off a cliff, and then Lionel throws his sword at He-Man. He says, "Catch this!" and he whips it down, and He-Man catches it. He's falling down, and then he says, "Sword of Omens, come to my hand!" And then it, you know, He-Man's holding onto it, and it flies him back up out of the hole. That could be a cool scene.
Pulls from the cartoon, like the Bible that was set forth with Leonard Starr, who wrote Exodus and a lot of the original episodes. You know, if they follow those guidelines, the same thing with He-Man. This could be money in the bank that it could lead to a constant. I'd love to see like a constant crossover book, like a regular monthly book of He-Man.
That's what I'm saying, like a regular title. Yeah, I mean, something that can carry on.
Yeah, and relaunching He-Man with like one-shot storylines, and Thundercats with one-shot storylines, and come back for another crossover.
Yeah, and it's something the fans would eat up. I mean, like crazy. Both, and I mean, you're not only getting just the Thundercats fans or just the Master fans. You're getting both. You're finally bringing them both together. I mean, you're gonna have so many people because, I mean, yeah. Granted, I'm a huge Masters of the Universe fan. I do like the Thundercats. I do own some stuff. I'm not a huge Thundercats fan.
What?
But I mean, I mean, for something like this, hey, hell, this could turn me to be a huge, you know, a bigger fan. You know what I mean? Like, and vice versa for those in the opposite direction. It's something that can really turn people's heads. It's something I think that Mattel is finally doing 100% right. you know, they're finally got their heads on right, and whoever's behind it is taking the reins, and they're doing the right thing with it.
Yeah, because I know it won't have the vibe of, like, the 80s, you know, because I admit when I was a kid, I mean, I always loved it. Yeah, I'd love to wish they would be together. I thought, man, how cool would it be to see He-Man and Lionel together? Because I love both
like,
cartoons.
Just like that, those action movies they came out with a couple of years ago with all the 80s stars, the Expendables, right? You know, just imagine if that would have came out in 1988, you know, with all those guys in their prime. I mean, you know, it would have been great, you know?
So when Lionel says "Thunder, Thunder, Thundercats, ho!" on Eternia, is Battlecat going to be affected by that signal? Is he going to run to Lionel?
He has power over cats. They addressed that one episode.
How cool! Check that out. Would Battlecat run to go help him, but even Panther, and so Panther would run over there. It's like Skeletor would have to turn on him.
Yeah, he could be running really fast at Lionel, and then Lionel kind of has his telepathic ability, and the Panther stops, and Skeletor flies right off Panther.
See, you know why we're doing this? We're trying to give ideas to the writers out there if they're listening. This is cool stuff. This is coming from fans who love the cartoons of both. Yeah. And that stuff you got to put in because people would eat that stuff up. And you see Panther turn on Skeletor. You got to think of this stuff.
We can see a Hachiman versus Ninja one-shot issue. I mean, to see a samurai versus a ninja. I mean, just an issue with Hachiman versus Ninja, Groon versus Scarecrow, or they team up to take over Castle Grayskull. And I mean, it just there's so many cool things that they could have. My mind's gonna blow up if I keep throwing out all these.
Yeah, relax your head. Let Brian think some. Go ahead, you relax, Tyler.
Jeez, I mean, like Monkey Inn and Beastman, I mean, you know, them button heads, the list could go on and on, you know, Snarf and Oracle.
It would be great. Fighting. Like you said, one-shot issues. You don't need to drag out, like, after the six-issue run, I mean, if it's a hot thing, give us just one-shots of stuff like that. It'd be fun.
No, without a doubt. I mean, the possibilities are endless. I mean, each property pretty much has its own counterpart, so, you know, I mean, who you can tag team up with and who you can have each other's villains.
The evil whore teaming up with the Lunatax, man.
Oh, that'd be cool. I mean, just imagine Panthro walking into Man-at-Arms workshop or vice versa. I mean, you know, they both have a heart attack.
They got to work together. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
see those two really coming up with ways of enhancing the Thunder Tank with some of Man-at-Arms ideas and things like that, man. And
yeah.
Panthro duking out with Ninja too, man. Since he's a ninja with nunchucks, has nunchucks.
Yeah, oh, I mean,
battle of the chucks, man.
Like I said, they both properties have like counterparts of each other. I mean, you know, it might have not been done on purpose. It could have been done on purpose, but I mean, if you look at everything that anybody's ever made, there's always something or some character that kind of looks or plays a role just like somebody else in some other cartoon, comic book, or movie or whatnot. So, I mean, but, you know, these two properties, they both pretty much have a lot in common. And it would be really, really cool. I mean, I'm hoping that it goes further than a six-parter. I mean, you know,
Let's hope they
got to see
right.
Snowman of Hook Mountain take on Icer, dude. I mean, too many possibilities, man. Oh my gosh,
And not for nothing though, but don't forget about Bengali and Tigra already being brothers, so they already have that covered. So we don't need any more brothers, sisters, or lost cousins and stuff.
Was that the new cartoon?
No, the original. Weren't they related?
No, there was no relations. They were another group of. Bengali, Pumara, and Link, so they were like that. As far as I know, there was no relations to those characters.
Oh, I thought they were. No, no. Okay.
They just looked alike, but
They had very similar designs. I could see where Bengali's like.
Yeah, no, Tigra had a brother in the new one. I forgot his name.
Yeah, the new one. It was Lion-O.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. I forgot they did do that. No, but he
that aspect of it
too, I think. Yeah.
But, oh my gosh, dude. I mean, I feel like there's so much stuff, like, to have the Driller and Twist
I actually just bought the complete set of the new new Thundercats series. I have to watch it. I watched them all on TV when they were out. I'm a burnout, so I forgot everything. But have to rewatch
that. So who's going to deal with Chitara? Because ain't nobody going to catch her. You can't forget about Chitara. That's going to be cool. Who's going to be accountable?
Dragster?
Nah, yeah. I can't think of nothing. Nobody's gonna be able to match her. She's so freaking quick. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, there really aren't a whole lot of like speedy characters. Yeah. I mean, Dragster, yes, probably one that
he's the only one that came to my mind. That's that you know had that ability to go fast. Other than that, I don't know, man. I mean, it'd have to be somebody who can teleport or something, maybe, you know, get her before she can move.
Like always, yeah, that's all they could do. But yeah, that'd be cool. So
with the staff too, like Chitara, you know, because Chitara has her bow staff.
Yeah,
I think there's a whole lot of characters that really fight with the bow staff either. So,
well, you got Teela.
Well, typically, Teela and their staff up. But I guess typically the cliche would have Teela and Chitara team up, or Pumaira and Teela, you know, yeah. And Linkso teaming up with. Maybe Mechanek. Since Mechanek is about sight and his periscope, Linkso is blind, but his senses are keen.
Like Daredevil?
Yeah, like Daredevil. So
yeah.
I'm just kind of spitballing ideas here. But
yeah, well, that's kind of what we do here.
Podcast just kind of throwing stuff at the wall of this stuff, yeah. Man.
What? No, it's a great – it's something really cool. I mean, it's – And it kind of came out of, you know, I think I first heard of it Friday or Thursday, and I was like, holy, you know, I was like, finally. I mean, I was so happy and excited when I read it. I mean, like, I literally screamed, you know, like it was.
We need a variant cover with Too Bad, Modulot, Multibot, and Two Time from Thundercats, man. All these two headed characters all in the same cover, man. That would just be.
Flowing ideas. Yeah, so it'll be, like I said, it'll be an awesome thing. Like, I even put up, just for fun, I put a picture of Filmation Prince Adam looking out the window.
That was a brilliant, tease for fans.
Yeah, that was cool.
Figured people knew it was fake, but there was a lot of people saying, I don't remember it either. Oh my God, I think I remember that. And I was like, oh God, didn't you guys see?
Yourself, Joe?
What's that?
Should have said, yeah, I made that in high school or like in eighth grade. That was my eighth grade.
We all know about it, people. We just didn't tell you.
That's right.
Yeah, Filmation crossed over with Ruby Spears, and they made a one-shot Thundercats episode.
Right. But well, those are all those ideas. So we spit them out there. That, like you said, that could be more of a topic another day. But I'll tell you what. T-Rex, you were mentioning a character in there a couple times. You were mentioning.
Oh, I did. I did mention a character a couple times.
Which I think now I'm going to pass it to Ozone. Ozone, he was talking about Scareglow, which is a character.
He was.
Some people think that he's pretty straightforward, just maybe one origin. But as we know, he's had quite a few. So why don't you shoot on Scareglow, your thoughts, and some of the origins you remember. Then we'll just start going right into it.
Well, Scarecrow is pretty. Scareglow. I think he's a great. Well, figure wise, from the 80s. I mean, I know the 80s had the whole craze about everything glowing in the dark.
Yeah,
but his figure. I mean, to this day, I still enjoy. I still love it. I mean, you know, I love turning on a light and then waiting 5 minutes and turning off and hanging out with it. You know, it's one of the coolest toys, and even the new classics toy. Is cool, but I'll touch on that in a minute. But the old school version of it, really cool. Now, there's a lot of different interpretations. You know, there's the interpretation that he's Skeletor's ghost. I think
that's the biggest thing is how it said he's the ghost of Skeletor, which has sparked such a debate among Masters fans of saying. Was that supposed to be Skeletor's ghost as if Skeletor died? Or what does that mean? And everybody said, well, no, it's basically how they said Faker is the evil robot of Skeletor. Right. They meant it's the ghost serving, basically. Because didn't they rephrase the packaging one time?
I believe you're right.
When Classics came out, they rephrased that, like addressing that issue that people debated about. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had that. And then he's supposedly like I can't think of the phrase I'm looking for, but he's like, you know, he's like a doppelganger demon from another dimension that Skeletor summons. I believe that was in the Star comic book. And then the classics, the bio, and I don't really like to agree with the bios, but the bios was pretty cool, saying, like, he has the key to the secret door that's on the playset, but he can't use it. It's in his possession, but he can't. I don't remember the exact wording.
Is he chained to his crimes or something?
Yeah, just like the guy from the Christmas Carol.
He's the Jacob Marley of the He-Man universe. He comes floating in the Snake Mountain, you know, Skeletor Snake Mountain, you know, just harassing him. But late at night when he's trying to sleep, you're going to be visited by three evil henchmen.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Three heroic
wars. How great would a Christmas story be with that, man? Dude, that idea right there. That's what we need. We need someone to do the Christmas Carol with Skeletor as Scrooge. But I don't want him turning good at the end. There, no, that's too easy. I just like him walking around being pissed off at things that he screwed up in his past lives. I think that would be kind of humorous.
Because that's got to be the classics one for me was the least favorite. Because, like I said, I hate that they were trying to give. Too much like origins to things, meaning, okay, don't get me wrong, I like origins of things, but you know what, before we know Scarecrow, just he was brought from another dimension with Ninjor. Simple enough, there you go. We don't need to say that
Star Comics nailed it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, in the mini comics even too, they both in both versions he was brought from another dimension. Now in the mini comic he was brought, but he had it to where he could strike fear into people, not make them move, which was cool. You know, it was cool. He brought him, but he never knew of Skeletor before. And Skeletor said, if you want to, like, go back to your dimension, you have to finish this task, whatever. But in the Star Marvel one, you see that he was supposed to be his, like, double, his ghostly double, and he's worked with him before. But what's strange is in that Star Marvel one, he didn't do anything about casting fear into anybody. He was just, like, a distraction.
Not at all.
And he would fly like Superman. He actually flew forward in that Superman pose. But, I mean, isn't that what you got out of T-Rex, that he didn't even have anything to scare anybody? He was just a double?
Yeah, essentially a ghost, but doesn't really do anything ghostly. Or, you know, he definitely got the short end of the stick in that book, because you got Blast Attack, Ninjor, and Faker, you know, kind of a lot of the hands-on of the fight, and he's strictly just there to think, is that Skeletor? That looks an awful lot like Skeletor. Let's follow him. And boom, you're in the fight. So, a character like that is just strictly like he's like a kite flying around. You know, he's just
He was doing. It was kind of annoying. But like the classics one, I didn't like the thought of him being a normal person at first, and then now he's a ghost and he's stuck.
Not to mention his name.
I don't even remember that part. Carrot
Null or something.
That's
like this. Just
sounds like the god they worship in Coneheads the movie. Cracknell. Silly.
And then we can't forget there was another one. There was the UK comics. Theirs was interesting, meaning, okay, when you had the toy, you know, yes, we could see the toy in the light, obviously, but you sat there, you had him in the light, when you turn off the lights, he glows and you could see him in the dark. Well, in the UK comics, his origin, he was created, Skeletor had something that basically looked almost like a circular Rubik's Cube, and he used this item, he was in like a yoga pose floating in the air, he used this item to bring forth somebody to help him, and he created Scareglow. Of course, you never even seen the name Scareglow until later in the comic, he didn't even call him Scareglow, and he brought Ninjor. It seems like Ninjor and Scareglow had been together all the time in their origins, but in this one, he actually is never visible. When it's in the light, you just see Ninjor talking, and you see a bubble next to him, a voice bubble, and it's supposed to be Scareglow. He's there, but you can't see him in the light. And when the lights go out, then Scareglow appears in the night. So it's like they took the toy gimmick and I think put it into the comic. I think that's what I got.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I just thought it reading the UK comics from the beginning. I didn't get to that yet. So
yeah,
I don't. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know T Rex. Yeah, I mean, did you see that one? I mean, did you see what I mean? Is that what you get?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I got out of it. I thought, because they trying to incorporate the gimmick of the toy by saying that, you know, he shows up in the darkness because obviously the toy shows up glow in the dark, you know, right. I thought that was a great way of kind of writing that into the story. And then, one of the things I saw, I'm like, oh, dear God, I can't believe they wrote this all the way back then. But he refers to He-Man and Fisto as the Masters. And I'm like, no!
You still have a problem with that. I told you. It's been said a long time. It's been said forever. It's been in the first minicom. Yeah. It's been there.
Yeah, that's what they're called, man.
I hate that.
Actually, the wasn't the villains called the Masters of the Universe or something like that?
Essentially they were supposed to be like formations. I was fine with that, but like everybody's like is like, you know, Beast Man is Savage Henchman. You got Master of Martial Arts. You've got, you know, Master of Disguise and stuff like that, but I to refer to the good guys strictly as Masters, I'm like, I don't like that. I'd hate it in 2000X. I'm not going to harp on it again, but when
that's
I saw
it, you know, it's weird, you've said it so many times, that's your grudge. You hated how it was said in the MYP cartoon,
it's
and you held that grudge. It was how He-Man said it, we're Masters of the Universe all. I know you hated that line
because I've sent some of the Masters out on landscaping duty, you know. It's just, it's such a, you know,
hey, they're just taking it from the room.
Title.
It was there from the original.
No, it doesn't bother me. I think it's cool. I mean, I mean, what else would you call them? I mean, it's not like you call
Heroic
them
Justice Warriors.
Eternia, you know,
Heroic Warriors.
Yeah, I mean,
Tyler's holding the grudge, the Eternal grudge. Go back to the mini comics originals.
You're entitled to it, but I don't know. I like them being called Masters, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm just used to it after all these years, but
it never bugged me. Like I said, I could see the context of what T-Rex is saying from the MYP, how it was said. But, I mean, I remember seeing it in the original mini comics, the Alcala ones, and I seen it there. So it was there, and so it never bugged me. But I know Tyler. He's got that anger with him.
I'm all about referring to everybody, like the heroes and the villains, which is, I think, is what they were trying to begin with, is that they're all masters of the universe. They are all masters of what they do, or even the villains. Like, because in the episode, like Father Like Daughter, like He-Man refers to Skeletor and them as, so this is the Master's Unstoppable Army.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
I don't, because like Skeletor is, you know, a master of the universe. I'm like, I'm fine with that. Like, I have no problem with that, but to refer to the good guys as their team name is Masters of the Universe. No. It's I need to shut up now, man.
You gotta let go of the hate, bro. You gotta let go of that hate.
I need to sit down on a couch with a therapist and just kind of like just. It all started when it's first
saw the episode. That's all right, well, bro. All
so
right.
Back to the greatness of Scareglow.
Back to Scareglow. Yeah, so far, the one to me that was the most evil was his mini comic, the way it was written there, because I liked how, at least, even though, yes, again, he didn't do much, he did accomplish, though, having Prince Adam held in fear to where he couldn't turn into He-Man, obviously, until, you know, I think it was Clamp Champ threw Ninjor into Scareglow. And then,
like the badass that he is, man, taking on a ninja with his bare hands, dude.
Exactly. And so, like I said,
it's actually really
least,
funny how you said they were together all the time.
Yeah, it is.
They're like bosom buddies, man.
Yeah, bosom buddies.
Yeah, but I did. Like I said, I liked that ninja. I mean, I'm sorry, that Scareglow's personality of being striking the fear. The other ones, which were cool, like I said, the one he was a distraction. The other, he's lights on, lights off, like the toy. But it's always cool to see that there were other origins. But you know, it's funny. Ninja, like I said, has been there all the time too. And what I liked in the UK comic, that ninja did something that was quite amazing to me. There was supposed to be this one kind of door that was leading to the control room of the Eternia, you know, place. It's like in there, but they're in central. I don't know if it was Central Tower, possibly. And I think Scareglow said something to Ninjor like that. That wall is like a meter thick, or I don't know how thick it was supposed to be. They said, there's no way you'll get through this door. And Ninjor kicked it right to pieces. He kicked a hole right through it. I was like, dang, I've never seen Ninjor shown like that. We know he's got his ninja skills, but that was like He-Man strength, kicking a hole right through this gigantic, thick metal door.
I'd like to think everybody to a certain extent has a bit more of an extreme level of strength, not to the level of He-Man.
Well, look at them, man. They're all jacks, you know. They have.
Well, who wants to see them? Like, all they can do is just like burst open the door with their shoulder. You know, that's what we want to see that Ninja could do like a spinning Van Damme helicopter kick and knock top of a statue off, you know, or something like that, or exactly. You know,
would it be with some Bloodsport music when he's doing that kick too?
With Kumite, you got to play the song Kumite by Stan Bush. Oh my gosh, man. That's awesome. Or do like a montage of Ninja training, you know, and it's like training with the guy that trains Van Damme at the beginning of Bloodsport. Shidoshi. He's got another name. Oh man, I'm a Van Damme fan. I even had the movie poster sitting in my room right now. Jeez.
But let's not forget also with the NBC comic.
The Power of Fear issue, man.
Right, the Halloween Power of Fear, you know, they did that too.
Wasn't he brought from another dimension in that too? Told that if you do what you're supposed to, I'll send you back to your dimension. Yes. Yeah.
Right. He was supposed to like fulfill his, you know, whatever, and then he would get his way back. So yeah, I mean, that's just another version of it. You know,
it was a good tweak on the character, kind of make him look like or make him like Scarecrow in the Batman series, where he has his fear toxin. If he hits you with it, you're going to be seeing, you know, what you fear most. Like with him, he will present your greatest fear to you, like he did with He-Man and Teela and Man-at-Arms. I'm like, you know what? I like, and to give him the kind of Grim Reaper kind of look with the big massive axe and
that was great.
The cloak over his head there. I mean,
I like that interpretation a lot.
Redesigning Scareglow like that. So
yeah, that's kind of exactly the way that how I picture him. Like, I mean, the vintage figure kind of had that thing going on, but you know, the cape was kind of floppy, you know. I don't know. That's how I would envision him if I was able to make a figure or draw really good.
One other thing is you got to remember, Ninja also, if he was to do a training montage and fight against some people there, T-Rex, he could be having that music from a Kickboxer that, you know, feeling so good
today. Yeah, and we got to get him good and drunk to see how good he is, and then we send in a bunch of guys to attack him, and he's doing, you know, split kicks in the air and slapping guys with his palms of his hands, and
that's right.
He's walking out drunk, Skeletor.
He's getting drunk in the tavern or something. One of them.
Oh yeah, he's like dancing with two chicks. You know, I mean, how awesome to see Ninja doing his Van Damme interpretation, you know, to that song, and Skeletor walk around the bar like telling people to leave. Ninja says your mother's, you know, sleep with mules and stuff.
Oh god. Yeah, exactly.
Oh god.
Okay, so we got to quit that. But yeah, so my.
Well, that's what he says in the movie. I'm not making that up. That's what Zien tells all the guys in the bar.
He was like, Zien, why did they fight me? Or want to fight me? And what did he say? I told him that your mother.
I told him, you said, they no good fighters, and that their mother have sex with mules. You what? Oh, I'll make them very angry, but fight hard. Good training. Now you drive me in pedicab.
Oh, God.
I love that movie, man. Kickboxer, man, that's one of Van Damme's finest.
Oh, shoot. All right, well, I'll tell you what. How about we take a break and we come back and we'll discuss a book you don't see that much, but it's a very big book.
It's Joe's favorite bedtime story.
And mine fell apart reading it.
Oh, wow, that sucks. You'll have to tell us that story right when we come back from break, then.
Yeah. All righty, let's take a commercial break, guys.
You're listening to a podcast from PopCultureNetwork.com.
And we're back. So, like Joe was saying, we will talk about now a book that we're going to discuss for the book of the week. And the book is called The Sunbird Legacy from Golden Books.
You said yours fell apart?
Yes, mine fell apart. For some reason, I guess the binding kind of gave way, so I don't know.
Is that on the hardcover or soft cover you have?
I got the soft cover. I don't have the hardcover.
Oh, wow.
I actually freaked out looking. I thought, you know what it was? Before Sandy, I had the hardcover, but I threw it out because it got, you know, caught in the hurricane. I had to rebuy it, and I was looking to reread it for the show, and I was looking through all my hardcovers, and I was like, I know I have it, where is it? And then I had to go to my softcover side and there it
Sorry
was.
Sorry we put you through that and if it fallen apart because, well, you'll find another one. But that
well, no,
does...
I mean, hey, listen, it fell apart because of its age, man. It like I said, it was only in the last couple of pages, and it just it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's still – it's there. It's – you know, so the last few pages fell off. It's not a big
And that's
deal.
Not a small book. That is probably their biggest – one of their biggest books they had back then. That was a lot of pages.
Yeah, yeah. But to me, it's kind of more like a comic than an actual, like their regular type of books. Like, it's kind of like in a comic theme style, so – I don't know. I enjoyed the book a lot. I mean, and it's been quite some time since I've read it. And there's a lot in it that, to me, there's a lot of good info. There's a lot of throwbacks. You know, you could say there's a lot of throwbacks now. Maybe not then when they wrote it, you know, because it was still going on. But, I mean, the way it was written, there's a lot of things in there. You know, I'll say as we go on about the story, but... I liked it. I thought it was a great story. You know, had a lot of cool characters in it, you know. And what'd you think about it, Joe?
This, like I said, to me, they had a lot of moments. I mean, first you see that they're, you know, Skeletor is trying to find this weapon that was destroyed, you know, years ago. Years ago there was a being known as...
How did you pronounce his name? Dyer.
I'd say Dyer. It was a
Dyer, right? Yeah,
Dyer created this weapon that he was going to use to, you know, help him conquer Eternia or the planet, and then, you know, this weapon got broken to pieces and scattered across Eternia, and it's been hidden through, you know, for thousands of years, whatever. And Skeletor wants to find all these parts to recreate this weapon to help conquer Eternia. But
Earl Norm did the cover. I didn't know that. Sorry.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Earl Norm did that cover. That's a beautiful cover. Beautiful.
Oh, that's sure it. So that is Earl Norm, like, you know, and that's like Earl Norm 101.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, it's iconic. You know, the thing is, sometimes people have seen that piece, but maybe the Sunbird legacy was not on the picture or was cut off, but
that picture needs to be put on a T-shirt for adults, like on a nice,
that's cool.
Soft, like a half.
Any Earl Norm. Earl Norm. I keep saying his name like we're fucking.
Like you say Earl Nipple.
Yeah, I'm like switching the letters around. I would buy anything that he did. I mean, he did great work for the.
Yeah, so it's an amazing cover, and I know. Well, like I said. It had its other things where Skeletor then basically takes and he has Evil Lyn, he has Beastman, he has Merman, and he scatters them across Eternia to try to find these, you know, parts to recreate the Sunbird. It's just in case some people got confused, like what was the Sunbird legacy? It's just a weapon called the Sunbird. So that's what that is. But and eventually, yes, all the masters then have to scatter across. Did I just say that, Tyler? Did I say that to
you? You know what? I was going to say, Joe. You're pushing my button there, man.
I had to do it for you.
Pushed your butt.
Let me rephrase that. All the heroic warriors had to scatter across of Eternia. They had to try to get the weapon, too, to make sure that Skeletor and his warriors did not get this, to create that. But what you see in this book that, to me, was cool moments. Before I get to that, no, go ahead, Tyler. You say your thing about it, and then we can get into these moments. Because this
book has a lot of
moments that make it very iconic in my mind. But go ahead.
Hold on. Before Tyler goes ahead, I just want to say, if the listeners out there haven't read it and you have it, I would pause, go read it, and then rejoin the conversation just so you can, you know, experience what we're going to go through with after Tyler's thoughts, because it is really cool to not to ruin, you know, like spoiler alerts or whatever you want to call it, but there's a lot of cool things in it, so... So, Tyler, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just...
Well, no worries. Unfortunately, this is one of the few Golem books that I don't own. I was not aware of it as a kid or anything like that. So, I've discussed this book with Joe before in the past, and I'm not as familiar with it as you guys are because I don't own it. And I've tried to reacquaint myself with it. Unfortunately, I had trouble looking through all the pages on my computer to reacquaint myself, at least in more details for it. But... Nice. But but that makes up the difference with you guys knowing it a lot better than I do. But however, one of the things I love about that, and it's just one of those good things about the Golden Books, is that the majority of them had beautiful interior artwork.
Yes.
Was it Fred Carrillo that did most of it? Yes. I mean, I thought somebody helped with them.
There were a total of three artists.
Adrian Gonzalez and Fred Carrillo.
Okay, I know there was at least more than one artist, but
yeah,
right.
But I think he did most of it. The other guy may have done like some of the inks or something like that. But his artwork,
it's not sloppy. It's not out of focus like some, you know, like some like books are.
The trap is the worst art I've ever seen in life.
Yeah, that was just like slop on paper.
Ironically, I wouldn't mind doing a review of that book just for the heck of it. The trap, obviously one of the highlights of the book is, and it would have been cool had they went with this. I know Joey's got a real soft spot for this idea of Evil Lynn turning into Screech.
God, I want to bring up.
Yeah,
that was one of the things I was going to bring up.
Yeah, I think we all were going to have that in mind. You're right.
I'm mentioning that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just giving my initial thoughts because you guys know the book a lot better than I do. So I'm just giving my another thing that I really like is how the Avion Warriors look very human like. They don't have bird eyes like in that one comic book that was done much later on.
Yeah, because beyond like even in the Filmation cartoon where you could say they have human faces and some were wearing goggles, this one, without a doubt, you see the one warrior come in injured and he's a completely human, bald-headed. I mean, he's bald-headed and he has a human face.
Yeah, I thought they looked so cool. Now, that is something I'd like to have is a two-pack of Avion Warriors that look very close to the way they're designed in this. I don't like to think of Stratus and them as having anything more bird-like.
That gives the egg of Avion more of a presence of realness, because it's like it's the egg that gives them the power to fly, not the wings or the backpack. You know what I mean? Like,
well, you know what I liked? That's the thing.
They can be humans.
Yeah,
you know,
but in this one, which was even cooler, is you've seen other type of Avion warriors, because they also had one that did have wings out of his back, and they had like helmets with little wings on the helmets. All these cool different outfits. I mean, I felt like making that figure after seeing that one in that book. I was like, oh, I gotta make that wing guy, because he's freaking cool looking. You know, I said it. A lot of people say, Joe, you say freaking a lot, but I'm not going to cuss on a podcast. Not saying I cuss anyways, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah, Brian.
Yeah.
I only did it once today and I caught myself. I said, sorry, I didn't mean to.
We didn't even hear you, but I'll say freaking.
Yeah, so I didn't curse last week.
You're good. You're a good guy. So, so you seem like different looks of the Avian Warriors, but yeah, now that you talked about Evil Lynn, we're just going to just hit into all the things that this book did that was different. Yeah. That a lot of people always warn about. Like, first, yes, you see that Evelyn is falling off an ice dragon, and that you think she's going to fall to her death, and she turns with a spell into Screech, and it's a different, more like kind of wicked, sadistic bird-looking Screech that not only is just a bird that flies, obviously, she shoots electrical bolts out of her feet, too, so she has powers.
Out of talents.
I mean, she's nasty looking in Screech form, but it's cool to see.
Vulture. I'm looking at it right now, sort of. She's kind of looking. She looks like. I don't know if it's just this one.
But it's cool to see because, a lot of people said, well, I like Evil Lynn, and which I love all the different interpretations. But some people said, I like Evil Lynn as just being Evil Lynn. Some people say, that's kind of interesting. It's almost like she's a counter child. The sorceress is Zoar, and now Evil Lynn is Screech. Some people might say it's cliche, but either way, it's still a cool, different little origin for Evil Lynn to see her turning into Screech.
Well, that's like what I said before, like how it's like a throwback or whatnot, or was it like just the normal for back then? Because it's like, honestly, I'm going to be honest with you guys, like I never even put two and two together that Evil Lynn turned into Screech until I just reread this, and I totally forgot about that. So that to me is really cool that she's Screech. I didn't know that, I totally forgot about it.
I wish they would take that and run with that. And it's almost like instead of
You know, because I'm not cool with Triclops' Doomsday, because Triclops is a bounty hunter and all that kind of stuff. I like the idea of Evil-Lyn to spy turns into Screech, and then when, you know, you see, like, the bird kind of, like, hovering over a particular conversation that He-Man and Man-at-Arms are having, okay, well, now Skeletor can find out because Screech, you know, Evil-Lyn, you know, listens to the conversation and flies back to Snake Mountain, transforms into Evil-Lyn, and gives him the information. Kind of like, this is going to be completely off the wall because this is what I do, pull movies out of left field that no one would ever expect to hear. But the second Ewoks movie, that evil sorceress that's in that movie, turns into a raven and will, you know, spy, you know, for the I forgot the name of the villains are in that movie. But that's what it makes me think of, is that giving her that extra element of, and plus it gives Screech. I mean, and you talk about characters that the guy completely ignored. Screech probably is probably worse than Zodak.
I mean, honestly, to me, growing up, it was like, okay, Screech was just a counterpart for Zoar. Like, now this kind of gives her the toy substance, because it's Evil-Lyn. It's one of Evil-Lyn's powers. It's what she transforms and turns into, uses a magical spell. So it's actually really cool now, the idea of Screech. Just not, you know, there's Zoar.
Because you're right, Screech is one of those characters that's kind of been always everywhere, too. First, you have your battle bird Screech, you know, with the armor just like Zoar the toy. Then you have Screech as Evil-Lyn, which is a nasty, more, I don't know, almost like grotesque-looking bird. And then you had that crazy Filmation one, which was a robot that was bigger than Battle Cat or something. It's like, that thing was, that hurt my head. But, really, that was a hot mess. So this Screech, at least, it is the most interesting to me. But
that was definitely cool. That was icing on the cake. I really like it. It totally made me like even enjoy the toy more now. It's just not, oh, okay, there's Screech. Now it's like, oh, that's Evil-Lyn. So it's pretty cool.
Yep. So that's that thing. Now another thing that was interesting was well, like how I said at the beginning, Dire was going to use this the Sunbird to destroy Eternia, you know, rid the world of the Council of Elders or whatever. Well, you know, we know that the Council of Elders, all their power has been transferred into a crystal, and it's in Castle Grayskull. But, beyond seeing stuff in MYP and, yes, reading about stuff in the Filmation Bible that everybody loves to quote, you never seen much of it in book form, but it was in the Sunbird Legacy also when He-Man goes to Grayskull. The sorceress, which is cool, she does something to the floor. It turns into a type of mist, and suddenly they go beneath Castle Grayskull. Sound familiar? They go beneath Castle Grayskull into this other room, and there's a crystal where
the Batcave.
Well, not just the Batcave, but you know how we finally got to see that basically in the MYP, the first episode, where she taps her staff on the floor, way down. Well, this one was different. Right. She made a mist on the floor. Suddenly they're below Castle Grayskull, and you see the crystal that holds all the power of the Council of Elders. And that's when, you know, the sorceress, you know, shows He-Man about this, all these visions of the past and future and whatever, and Dire and the Sunbird. So I like that little thing because, again, people who've seen stuff in MYP and maybe never got into the Filmation Bible, it was actually back and it was shown before in some form. It was already shown, kind of. So that's kind of cool to see that it was back in a book back in the 80s.
Yeah. Hey, my book is missing that. I don't have that.
Oh, it's possible you could. Really, you might have had those pages out of there. And T-Rex, did you remember that part, or was that one of the parts you maybe didn't get to?
That's one of the parts I didn't get to, unfortunately.
Well, if you, like I said, if you,
is it in the front or the back?
I just need to go on eBay and buy me this book. I don't know why I've delayed buying this book.
Probably, here's the thing. What's that? 15 cents, where I've been getting all my old He-Man and She-Ra books.
It's one of the trickier ones to get. The Sunbird Legacy is one of the trickier books to find because some people will try to really overprice it, but you can find a good price.
Joe, where is this? In the beginning or the end where she taps the floor?
Well, in this one, it wasn't tapping like how they did in MYP. It was when He-Man gets summoned to Castle Grayskull. And she does they say suddenly a mist appears.
Oh, okay, I do have that. Okay, I have that. Yeah, I see it now. See? What he's talking about. Yeah.
All right, so there you go. So there's
And they do go down, and there's crystals and stuff. So, yeah, it is there. So it's kind of like,
it's just a way of enlightening that, you know, obviously the people, you know, that did the MYP cartoon, yes, they got a lot of their information, obviously, from the Filmation Bible, that stuff that we never got before to see, but maybe they also seen the book and it inspired them a little. It's a possibility.
It definitely is. Can't rule it out. Never know.
So that's that one. But I'm going to, before I go to this other thing with He-Man, I'm going to say the one and you guys can go with it. This is the one time.
I know Joe was just chomping at the bit to discuss.
Oh, I have been chomping at this. People say there's something He-Man doesn't do, but this is the one time he did it. He killed a living thing in this. He decapitated that giant snake, and he slashed his head off, and blood poured right out. There's no ifs, ands, and buts. Was it not a real snake? Was it? No, this was a snake.
He was cut the his blood head orange?
Blood orange, and it was real red blood because he pulled that blade out and decapitated that sucker. So for people who said that He-Man has never killed before, look at that's another thing with the Sunbird Legacy. See,
yeah, He-Man I was going to bring that up as well. So we said, you know, we brought that up in the past about, you know, the gore and stuff in He-Man and Masters, and so yeah, that's a perfect example of him having to kill and draw blood to fulfill his, you know, his whatever.
This book didn't have a kiddie feel. People think even these books were kiddie like. No, this didn't have a kiddie feel at all.
No, and that's why I said before it was more like a comic book. I mean, type of feel. You know, it that's what I pretty much. You know, it was more of a comic for me. Other than a book.
The older books anyway had much of a kiddie feel to them to begin with. I mean,
they really didn't. But you know, some people might want to nitpick anything. But
well, I mean, some like Joe's favorite, A Friend in Need. You know, that might be a little bit more lighthearted or something.
Or
like
was it
that.
A Hero in Need? The one with Orko?
Hero in Need. Friend in Need. That's the episode from season one.
Yeah.
Isn't it so? I don't know.
No, you got A Friend in Need by Randy Newman. That's what you're thinking of.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
But go ahead, Tyler. Your thoughts on the death and just, like I said, there was no questioning this one like other things maybe.
I think it's justifiable, and frankly, I think, you know, what is so wrong with He-Man slaying a beast or a monster of some kind? Because it's not a character. It's not like he's gutting Beastman or cutting off Merman's. Right. It's a monster. It's, you know, I'm like, that. If He-Man's going to slay or actually impale something with the Power Sword, it ought to be something like that, something that you can clearly say, this is not going to, you know, I don't know, frankly... I was some stuff like that never traumatized me. If anything, it'd have been awesome to see He-Man do stuff like that, and I don't think my parents would have been about to begin with.
You can see its power and what it's capable of doing, you know, because you always hear about all his battles and stories and from, you know, whatever, but you know, you kind of want to see it too. Yeah, you're right. You don't want to see him slice off Triclops's head or trapjaw or whatever. You want to see it in action, but you know, it's something like a snake or whatever that is. You know, big deal. You know,
it was just definitive though. It's like not, you know, like how I love messing with you guys about Double-Edged Sword, that mini comic where he was slashing through the plants, and in every panel it was all green juice of just these plant creatures. But in the last panel, for whatever reason, they painted that juice red, like it was actual blood. So I was like, hey, there is blood, but that's always debatable. People saying, oh, no, that was probably supposed to be green. But this one, you can't debate it. He killed a snake. So for people wanting to see death, that He-Man, his first death, definitive, it's back in something like, see, so that's another.
Yeah.
Another thing I got from it, and then this is where, like I said, I'd like to hear what you guys thought about it. It's what I think I got out of it, but I could be wrong. To me, He-Man didn't have his superhuman Superman strength like from Filmation or whatever. It was more like the strength that we kind of knew in the original mini comics and other stuff, meaning there was instances where he was really in trouble and you would expect maybe that, you know, super powered in strength he did, but he almost felt like he always had to have his sword. Every time he was in trouble,
he was looking for a sword.
I need my sword. And then when he gets his sword, he's like, now it's like then he could fight. But did you guys get that out of it too, that he wasn't super strong He-Man?
Yeah, no, I totally understand and agree with what you're saying with, because even, you know, throughout the whole story when he didn't have a sword, you know, he was like, I'm reaching for the sword or I'm trying to get to it, or he was looking, actually trying to get to it. And then he was able to do battle and fight and stuff like that. So, yeah, I agree. I think that this pretty much kept away from the whole gigantic super strength Superman theory and kept more to the power sword of, you know, being that sort of like his way of having power and strength.
Yeah. So T-Rex, your thoughts? Didn't seem like he was super strong He-Man, correct? Or what did
no,
you get
no,
on?
But I am all for emphasizing the power sword, because to me, as a kid, it was like He-Man and or like that is part of the, it's like, you know, Lion-O and the Sword of Omens, or Conan and the Sword of Crom, or the Sword of Crom, or you've got right. Beastmaster and his sword, or Perseus and the sword was given to him by the gods of Olympus. I'm like, I like Hunter, emphasizing that this is like sword. What's that?
I was just saying, like Thundar and his sword, Brave Star, his sword. I mean, yeah, you know.
Yeah,
Jason Voorhees and his machete. But go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Or, oh shoot, I had like a good example here of like kind of just making fun of the idea of like the hero having him. I was thinking like Kramer's character in UHF with his mop. Like no, not to be put, we're not going to even get that reference. But Michael Richards playing the janitor in UHF, we're like, no, it's my mop, yeah, or Toxie and his mop. There you go.
I got that reference. There we go.
There you go. But no, I just like emphasizing that the power sword, like that, is like the that is the true like. I'm trying to think of the right way. Emphasizing the importance of the sword, because that's what He-Man is. Like, it's He-Man and the power sword. I'm like, that's sure, emphasizing sure. just how important that sword is, and not so much on, well, he has the strength of 20 Superman, and we'll conveniently use that to, we've written ourselves into a corner here, just have him, you know, break through the mountain with his, you know, his right. forearm, something like
right.
that.
Right. No, that's true.
Yeah, no, I like that they emphasize more on the sword.
And that's kind of more of the strength. Traditional... Big humble things of He-Man is that He-Man is a strong man, but the sword is the extension of his strength, is slicing, right. dicing through monsters and through solid objects with the power sword. I'm like, that's, you know, it's just kind of sticking with what Mattel was essentially going with the character.
Sure. They made a point of that too. They really emphasized his need of that sword. I mean, I felt like at times, you know, maybe that he could have still, maybe, yeah, not superhumanly threw somebody into the moon or something, but maybe just a little more hand-to-hand combat or doing something. But it was still, like I said, yes, they really wanted to emphasize that sword in that. And it's not
and
like
they definitely did in this.
Yeah, because some people might say, well, Joe, this was before the film. No, it wasn't before filmation, because the Sorceress was in this. So yeah, they could have very well, if they wanted, put it the superhuman strength, but they chose not to. And I'm glad they didn't either, because it made it feel like when he was stuck in situations.
This came out in 83.
Yeah, it was harder for him to get out of these situations. Yeah. That's what you want. You don't want the hero to always feel like he can easily get out of something.
You can tell these things are definitely heavily influenced by, you know, Conan. I mean, the killing of the snake alone. I mean,
that's
reminiscent of the first Conan film, was slicing off the head of the giant snake.
Exactly. I mean,
definitely sticking to those very, you know, barbarian elements, and that's something that I think is desperately needed in like a current He-Man media, whatever it might be, to have a very hardcore, you know, there's technology there, but there's a lot more sword and sorcery where these guys are relying on blunt weapons and sheer strength and sweat to just, you know, take out the other guy. And if you got to cut off a head here and there, so be it, man.
Hey, you got to do to win
the
battle.
You know what also helps with it? The other thing that kind of helps give, at least in the Masters comics back then, or books, that seemed like it always made it feel a little more barbaric, ancient compared to the cartoon, for whatever reason, is when they would still draw Teela as the warrior goddess.
I like that a lot. Too.
Yeah, I do. And they did that in this. So you see the sorceress as she is, but you know, like how we've seen her in filmation. But when they show Teela, she don't look like filmation Teela. She looks like the warrior goddess with that snake arm. I love.
And she's
when
always written well. Like, she's not written as like this is the kind of very fluffy female character, like damsel in distress kind of thing. No. She's written as like someone who can hang with the boys.
Yeah, because she was fighting lava monsters. Just to let you know, she was
She was by herself.
Yes,
Tila was always written better in the Golden Books in general. Like, she was never written as a nagging character. She's written as somebody, you know, and really, like, from Tila's Secret to this to Caverns of Fear, she's written as someone, like, if she's in over her head, it's because Trapjaw has come along and grabbed a hold of her. You know, we're talking about a cyborg is grabbing a hold of a human female here. She may not be able to get out of everything, but she's written as a very competent character.
Yeah, I always like Tila.
They do write her well. And yeah, they definitely do. And speaking of that, I just want to bring up something here. When Tila's in the swamp and she's overlooking the ship that comes in.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead. I think I know what
you're going to say. Two guys that kind of look like snake men to me, and they kind of even talk like snake men.
They now, do, and they serve merman. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
I'm so glad I was just wondering
what you guys thought about that, because like this, it's like weird because it kind of is before the snake men were introduced.
It was.
I think that's got to be Conan influence, man.
That definitely, I agree with you with that. I mean, they definitely are snake men to me, and they're speaking snake menish.
Yeah, where they do that with skin. Everything.
Yeah,
you know, the thing. I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to bring beyond them being snake men serving merman. There's something they did and said that I liked. It's a phrase I've never heard in any Masters media. Is they called Tila, she's a pink skin. They referred to like flesh characters like that. They called her pink skin. I was like, isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah, that is. Yeah, like instead of like a human, pink skin. You're right.
Yeah, they called it the pink skin. So I loved seeing Merman have some warriors and that were snake men. And just like T-Rex was saying, that's probably some harken back to Conan with some snake warriors.
Probably, yeah. I mean, that probably had something to do with it. But it's just interesting that you know that he has control over the snake men, and maybe I don't know, maybe he somewhere along the lines he does, and he just never used that power. And
dang it, you just did it again, Ozone. You made me think of something else. Beyond you see more of Beastman and his control over creatures, where he's controlling these Panthor men, and they're purple. They look like Panthor, but they're men, and he uses his powers.
Oh, and he calls them that, Panthor men, too, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So isn't that cool? I mean, this book, guys, I'm telling you, fans,
it did a lot.
You got to get this. There's so much in this thing, and they go back to the thing where I told you before how they said Panthor was kind of, at least from Golden, his character was written as somebody that's supposed to always be scared of Battle Cat when confronted. And sure enough, he ran from Battle Cat when Panthor seen Battle Cat. I mean, guys,
Battle Cat says something like, we finally, you know, we're going to go toe to toe, and boom,
Panthor. He runs like always. You guys just don't know. You got to read this book, guys. I mean, there's so many things. It's like, how many things have we said? It's almost endless. This is one of the best books they probably put out back then. It's really a fantastic book.
It's a really great book. The other thing I wanted to say, Arm's not relying on
inventions in this book too. This is someone who's strictly relying on combat skill and his mace. You know, and this really just follows the guidelines of everything that was essentially established. So there's not a whole lot of Filmation references in this. So it's definitely like, you know, if you like Alcala, this is kind of the same rules
The pre-DC stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. It's definitely neat. Yeah. And it's not so much on, I mean, the Lady Bird is probably more technology based than anything.
And like the other thing I just wanted to say is that I thought it was pretty funny how Battle Cat talks to He-Man like Robin talked to Batman in the 66 TV show. It keeps calling him chum. It's pretty funny.
He did say chum. Yeah, he did call him chum
a few times. Yeah. It's actually funny. It made me laugh. But yeah, I mean, overall, this 10 out of 10, man, I give it a 10. I mean, it's just a great book. I mean, it has so much in it. And I mean, if you analyze it the way that we did, I mean, and think about all the aspects and everything of what you know about Masters of the Universe, I mean, this has it all. I mean, it's really well done. And
this has the elements of what a live action movie, like a new one, ought to have. Like the right. all the basic yeah. elements. You're not changing anything. You're just giving these guys something to chase after just to get them all into one big fight. Because that's all He-Man fans really want to see is a big fight with these characters.
Yeah, and I mean, they didn't really go out of their way. I mean, there's really nothing crazy. I mean, it's just straightforward. It's what we know, and it's not.
The one thing we intentionally did in this one, it's something I wanted to kind of continue to do, was for fans who hopefully will read this, I'm sure they will, I didn't say how this ended, if you noticed, and none of us did. We're not going to say how the ending was. So, yeah, you'll have to see what the ending's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, no, read it. Yeah, that's why I said before we started talking about it, if you haven't read it, just read it before and, you know, like pause the podcast and then come back because you'll definitely enjoy it. And then maybe we, you know, brought up things that maybe you didn't catch. You can go back and look at and read and look over or whatnot. Because, I mean, it's just such a great book. The way it's very well written. It's really well drawn. I mean, it's got, you know, from their own Norm cover on, I mean, it's great. It's a really great book.
Yep. So if you haven't got it, you get it. If you haven't read it, you can find it online to read. T-Rex has got to get himself a copy now.
Yeah, I'll get myself a copy of it for sure because I've got everything else, and I just it's one of those things that
again, like I said, I've been buying a lot of pop and whatever regular He-Man books on Amazon. I mean, like 10 cents a penny. And paying like $4 for the shipping. So, I mean, you know, you're pretty much buying a book for $4. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean,
it's just been years since I've actually bought He-Man books on the internet. I think because I finished it off on eBay years ago. But I guess, and oddly enough, I just bought, hopefully it comes in good shape, the Betrayal of Stratos VHS tape that I've ranted and raved about
nice.
On Amazon for like $5. But there's no picture, so I'm hoping that the description I'm not going to get shortchanged on. So hopefully if this works out right, I can go back on there and get me the Sunbird Legacy.
Yeah. Well, like you said, try Amazon. You know, it's where I've been going lately to get my books because, I mean, you know, the amount that they charge on eBay for shipping, you can get the book plus the price, the shipping and the book for less than what they cost for shipping on eBay, and it comes in great condition. So, you know, I would, you know, give it a shot.
I think I will do that.
Yeah, it's worth it. Trust me. That's where I've been getting all my old pop Golden books from and Lady Bird books from lately, and continuing on doing so. You know, until I got them all.
There's a lot of good Golden books I'd love to discuss with you guys too, man. Like even like some of the smaller ones, like Caverns of Fear, or even like I know we did the Horde hardcover book, but it'd be fun to like do Teela's Secret because that's another Horde related one too, or River of Ruin.
That's a great book, too.
Yeah, it's got Cyclone and Mossman in it, man.
That's a great book. Yeah, I like when they have the extended characters, you know, just not the regular, the regular cast.
But that's why those earlier Golden books, like Time Trouble and Sword of Skeletor, that's another classic one, man. Oh, my gosh, that's probably my favorite of that original 4 to 5 books is Sword of Skeletor.
Yeah. I just got to go back and see which ones I have because, like I said, Hurricane Sandy did a number on a lot of my stuff, and my book collection and comic collection got destroyed, so I had to go back and buy a lot of stuff. So I don't know if I got it all back or not, so I got to make sure that...
you can always watch the Golden Book VHS tape on YouTube and just watch all those. That'd be fun. Yeah, because it's on YouTube. I've watched it on YouTube.
Yeah, and it's got like a little bit of animation in it too, right?
Yeah, very limited. I mean, I've got them on VHS, but I haven't had them transferred to DVD, so it's on YouTube to watch.
Yeah, I just remember renting it and having like very limited, or you know, like a hand would move or something like that.
You'd see like a sword blade kind of across the screen to give you, but it was the voice acting was pretty solid too, and
The people or one episode was like John Irwin and Alan Oppenheimer.
The book that came with the Hordak Grizzlore 2-pack.
Yeah, they had different voice actors for the Golden Book tapes, but they were actually pretty well done voice acting for what it was supposed to be.
Were they consistent? Did they keep the same actors? Or
yeah,
it was
for the most part,
I thought they did.
There's two tapes, and at least with the first tape, Skeletor and He-Man are the exact same all the way through it. Teela is too. Evil-Lyn doesn't have any, she's only in one, and she's only in Time Trouble, but Merman, I think, he only has, like, one speaking, or no, I take that back. He's got the same essential voice, and,
Oh, all right, cool.
Yeah, if you watch it, it's pretty, I'll take a look.
It's annoying, though, when you're watching one, and then the next one, it's completely different, and just out of whack.
That's one of my problems I had with Filmation, because so many times they, it's like Manny Face's voice would change, and Clawful's voice would change.
Marlena's voice was different every episode. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. I didn't find her voice change as offensive as something like Mechanek, or because even though it was Lou Scheimer's voice. Triclops' voice changed a little bit here and there too, but Mechanek and Manny Face, I felt like, were the biggest offenders of like voice, and Clawful. Clawful was all over the place.
Yeah, I hate it. The voice one, he used to talk like this. I don't know who he, I forget what character it was, but whoever did that, I don't know, that bugged me.
How did he talk?
But
I know, I that sounded like a caricature from trying to think what his impression sounded like something. Do that again, Brian.
It sounded like it and like when you're going in and out, like, you remember, like, back in the day when cell phone service was really bad, and you, especially like, well,
do it again. I want to hear it. The fans want to hear that voice. What was that voice you did?
Yeah, I can't do it on the spot.
You said something like this or something. What did you say?
It almost sounds like you're talking like Andrew Dice Clay. Like, oh man, I talk like this.
I can't do it again. I'm sorry. Now that you want me to do it, I can't. I'll do it again probably in the future. I just can't do it now. Like, now that I'm on the spotlight.
Put him on the spot.
The Frozone's a little shy.
Yeah. Well, but no, man, this was a great episode. We covered a lot, we talked a lot about the, I don't know how many pages are in this book, but I mean, we did a half an hour on probably a 1,200 word book,
Yeah, it's pretty heavily condensed considering how big the book is.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you don't have
great
this
art.
Book.
I mean, there's a lot of great art, so I mean, every piece is something amazing to look at every page, but I mean, it's a lot. It's a very in-depth story. There's a lot of pages, but it's, like I said, it's well worth it. It's probably the biggest story I think they had back then.
It's definitely well worth the money, and again...
Hey! Ozone, where you at?
He's working on his Dice Clay impression.
He's like, hey,
yeah, he was doing Dice Clay so good, he just got banned. No,
Dice Clay showed up at his door.
It just hung up on him. We'll try to get him back here real quick.
Okay.
Just long enough to say goodbyes, I guess, at this point.
He's like, all right, guys, we're back. Okay, now we're leaving. Goodbye.
That sounded like a fart.
Oh, I don't know what happened there. I lost you, but then I got you back. That was strange.
All right, well, you're going to have to wrap us up, Ozone, before we get knocked off here.
All right, Tyler. Do your famous outro and give the fans their homework.
All right. And I'm getting pretty burnt out here, to reference Brian here. No one ever tells me that they watch any of these episodes I recommend. I feel like Donald Sutherland in Animal House. Like, I'm not serious, people. This is my job. Like, no one's listening. Everyone's just ignoring. Oh boy.
Don't
anyway,
give them so much. Give them a little taste then, and make them then want it. Just give them a little crumb of it. Maybe
make
they're
work for it.
I give them an episode to watch, and I'm like, not one person said, you know what, Tyler? I took your recommendation for. Betrayal of Stratus, and frankly, I think it's one of the greatest episodes of all time.
This is what's happening. You're telling them, like, the story of the whole cartoon. Like, oh, I felt like I watched it already. No sense in me watching that.
You gotta
thing.
Start your own network.
I'm not
like
giving
Oprah
enough
does.
Time to give a full diagnosis of the episode.
Well, go ahead. Give,
all right,
give us
all right,
an episode.
Anyway, all right, my recommendation for these people who pretend to listen to me here is Disappearing Act, written by Douglas Booth, from season one of He-Man. It's definitely a very
simple story, but it's a good like Skeletor and Beast Man, you know, plotting against He-Man to using invisibility helmets, and it's got a lot of cool monsters in it. It's got a good one-on-one fight between a He-Man and Skeletor. You get kind of a Faker reference in this episode, which it's not Faker, but it's about as close to Faker reference. Cool. Yeah, it's cool, yeah. But it's definitely an episode that gets buried and people don't ever. I mean, really, this is an episode that nobody ever talks about.
And it's a very good episode. It really is a very good episode.
Everybody has written great. I mean, Orko is a very, you know, lovable character in this episode.
Made me always think that Prince Adam could have got caught, turned into He-Man.
Oh, man. And it was done so well with that,
yeah,
too.
It was close.
And it was, I remember as a kid thinking it was very kind of scary. Because then when he grabs Orko and says, like, what was that noise? And the Skeletor's just been hanging out in that room the entire time behind the curtain, like, oh, dear God, man.
So watch if it. Only watch he knew.
If, yeah, and it's so good. So that is my recommendation for you posers out there.
So you kids go out there and go watch it. Make Tyler happy, please.
That's right. And as for me, I'd say, remember, like always, go to the all-encompassing Masters of the Universe Facebook page, Masters and Mythos, the Vintage Obscure Facebook page, Motu Nation, Descendants of Grayskull, Children of Eternia, all great groups and all great people.
Alrighty, it's my turn. I started a new page, ladies and gentlemen. It's called Masters of the Galaxy, so please come join in the fun and post away, and just like Joe said, go to the all-encompassing page.
Wait, where is Masters of the Galaxy located? Is that a Facebook page or a website?
It's a Facebook page. So just type in Masters of the Galaxy on Facebook, and it should come up. There are two. One is a fan page, which is getting deleted, because I set it up wrong, so that's getting deleted, and then go to the fan
page. By popular demand, it's being deleted.
No, I didn't put up out of business.
go to our page for getting rid of the sucker this week. Goodbye. Yeah. Like, what?
So go to Masters of the Galaxy Facebook fan page, go to the all-encompassing, go to He-Man World, go to popculturenetwork.com. Go to fansofpower.com to listen to this and past episodes to catch up if you've missed any. And I'll rock on, people. Until next time.
Have a powerful day.
Maybe poker's just not your game. I don't know. Let's have a spelling contest.
This is my new mop. George, my friend. He gave me this mop. It's a pretty good mop. It's not as good as my first mop. I miss my first mop. But this is still a good mop. Sometimes you just have to take what life gives you. Because life is like a mop. And sometimes life gets full of dirt and crud and bugs and hairballs and stuff. You got to clean it out. You got to put it in here and rinse it off and start all over again. And sometimes... sometimes life sticks to the floor so bad, you know, a mop is not good enough. It's not good enough. You got to get down there like with a toothbrush, you know, and you got to really scrub. You got to get it off. You got to really try to get it off. But if that doesn't work, you can't give up. You got to stand right up. You got to run to a window and say, hey, these floors are dirty as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.